Thank you for tuning in to This Week in Mormons, our 130th episode, everyone. Clap from the rafters. This week's episode is called The This Week in Mormons Rises. I think NBC can technically sue us now because you sang that.
That's right. They can sue us for all we are worth.
What if they take your server away?
Just my soul.
Don't you love random songs that are trademarked and you get in trouble? Like the Happy Birthday song, for example.
Oh, yeah.
I was actually thinking the other day, your birthday's coming up in about a week. And I remember 2 years ago on the air, I had my guitar and I sang Happy Birthday to you.
Yeah.
And I've realized in hindsight, we could be hit with a lawsuit for that.
What would they sue us for?
I don't know, but I realized because I thought about doing it again or some other version of it. Then I said, wait a minute. I can't do this anymore. I've learned. So while I don't play Happy Birthday, I think I still continue to put music that I don't hold the rights to for the beginning and end of the show. But I feel like I'm just I'm promoting.
And
the music. Oh, I'll just say it here on the record.
We're insignificant.
I will say it on the record. None of the music we put on the show is ours, except for that time we sang the This Week in Mormons.
Oh yeah, that was our
idea. Is our original creation. But. All the rest I own no rights to. I'm just helping people by giving them exposure. I make no money from them.
I am the baddest of them all.
I showed a bunch of people that the other day. They were very excited.
Oh, it's an entertaining viewing party.
The song alone is great, and then when you take it to the next level and find it on and actually see the music video for it, it's marvelous.
Yeah. It's nice with the snot running down his face.
And his Dwight Schrute friend just holding a rifle for no reason.
Blood and urine everywhere. It's a dream. It is a dream.
Thank you, Ulysses S. Grant.
What did he do with blood and urine?
He's the one who gave us the speech about blood and urine. Oh, that was feces and urine.
Wait, what?
I was thinking of the whole thing in Kingsport.
In Kingston? That wasn't Ulysses S. Grant.
That was who it was supposed to be.
Was it?
Yeah, that guy who was speaking all about coming and being in there and fighting and stuff, and how people dumped all the feces and urine all over him and stuff.
They dumped.
That the guy who,
feces.
He only said it like 5 times just to drive it home.
Well, I felt it by the end.
If you're a new listener, this might be totally out of context and you don't understand what we're talking about. Go back about 7 episodes or so. Or from the beginning. Actually, building on that, I'm surprised when we get emails from people that tell me randomly, like, so I just found you guys and I started listening from the beginning. And I'm like, really? This is our 130th episode. Even I wouldn't want to put in that much time. So I applaud you, fine people. Well done.
Well, what's weird is that this feels like a time-sensitive show, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Well, yeah.
It's the weekly news.
Yeah. But maybe it's not. Maybe we are so good that what we do is immortal.
I think it could be that.
We should go back and listen to really old episodes and see if we are better now or then. You know how it is. I mean,
I think we're better now.
At this point, we're like a television show it's really fresh when it starts, and now it's very easy to settle into a routine. You know, we don't want to let things get stale around here.
I think yes. No, I
are
think
we
that,
stale listeners? Please tell us.
No, I think that if anything, we've hit our stride. We can actually have conversation hours. Before, I still remember running down our agenda checklist and just being like, and now in the news is...
Well, there's pros and cons to that. We used to more itemize exactly what order we do things in, and there was more organization. I don't know if that's good or bad. And now we have just the general pool of stories for me and you, and we just kind of go at it. You know, so I don't know. I don't know if we're better off now or how we were before. I just don't.
Also, remember back in the day when we used Google Wave? I think we were the only ones using Google Wave.
I kind of miss Google Wave. I still liked Wave more than well, I guess I'm used to Trello now. Al, are you an investor in Trello as well?
No, but Joel Spolsky, the inventor of Stack Exchange, is the creator of Trello. He made it to fulfill a need. And I like that guy. He's a good New Yorker. I tried to get you a job with him.
You
did? But you wouldn't take it.
Which guy? Was this that guy I talked to on Twitter that one time?
Yeah.
No, we talked a little bit. Then it just didn't happen.
It's like my dating life. Well, we talked a little bit on Twitter. Then it just didn't happen.
Is that what's come to me more?
I know you're single. If you just reply to my tweets or follow me so I could DM you, everything would change.
My roommate's really excited because his clout score went up by like 12 in one day.
Ooh.
Because he campaigns for a prominent presidential candidate who is not Mitt Romney. And
Obama.
Yeah. And so he was out doing, and he tweeted something, but then Obama's official Twitter feed retweeted it, and all of a sudden it just took off from there. He's been very excited.
Let's take a look. My clout score has dropped 3.
I'm down somewhere around 51 or 50.
In the past 30 days.
Yeah, mine has 2. I don't use Twitter as much anymore.
You know what that means.
You are a failure?
It means nothing. Because clout score is a nothing score.
No, it's real.
I'm very influential to others.
Clout is real, okay?
I've got a 57. I feel like that's pretty good influence. Like, what do I do with that?
Yeah, I've been hovering in like the mid-50s for a very long time. I don't know how to go higher.
It means nothing. There's nothing here.
The thing that bugs me is I feel like it used to only be for Twitter, and then I feel like now that they've roped in other social media channels, it has no extra effect. Because I feel like my Facebook, my Instagram get a lot of pull, and I feel like those should be boosting me up more as far as the responses.
No, it's a nothing score. It's meaningless. For those of you who don't know, clout, KLOUT,
like Krispy Kreme with K's, same thing.
Is an app that tries to measure your rate or your reach and influence on social media, and so it'll assign you a numeric score based on like what you say and how many people listen to it or do anything with it. To the point of when Spotify came to the US, they were open to clout scores of 45 and above, right? Things like that.
Yeah.
Because the thought is that with that kind of a score, you would be more apt to influence others to use the app or build demand for it. But what it actually is just a stupid, stupid business idea. It's a stupid app, meaningless, and it just like it's for people that like to stroke their ego.
Ah, but is it a stupid business idea? Even if it's a lot of fluff, is it a stupid business idea? Because people care about it, people talk about it, people drop clout scores like a buzzword. They do, and even if it's dumb,
who drops a clout score like a buzzword?
People.
If these are people, Jeff, you need to walk away. You need to say, I'm not talking to you anymore.
What's Mitt Romney's clout score? I'm curious about his clout score.
Go check it out.
Well, I thought you were there so you could do it for me.
No, I don't even care. Like, this is stupid.
This is stupid.
Speaking of stupid, how's that Mobatch going, Jeff?
It's awful. It's terrible. It's almost unwatchable.
Very painful.
I like that you ask me how it's going when you watch the same ones I do.
A highlight would be this last week's episode where I guess they lost most of the footage, and so it's 8 minutes of interviewing talking about the date. Could you imagine being sat down on a couch and having to tell about some awkward, terrible date?
And no, but they liked it, so it wasn't that awkward.
Knowing that's going up. What is she? She was an esthetician.
Yeah,
she's Idaho.
She's a winner. I'm not knocking estheticians; they're fine.
No, I like nice skin and things, but
I feel like it reached a low when she said we had escargot or snails, whatever it's called, and I was just like forehead.
Yeah,
he loved her. He loved her. And she was more like the least enthusiastic person I've ever seen. Why do you hire someone who's just like, yeah, I guess I'll like be here on the date? And she was like watching the one character on Parks and Rec whose name I can't think of right now.
I need to watch some more.
I'm blanking on her name.
To quote a good friend, friend of the show, Emerson, she says, he's going to end up with a 19-year-old dental hygienist. She's basing this on when she went out with some girl that was a little bit chubby. And he said, I'm not into your look. Obviously, look being super skinny. And then she says, and he's totally skinny fat.
He's skinny fat. That's adorable. April Ludgate, by the way. April. That's the character. I was confused. She was just like that. And then the weird artist, quote-unquote, one, that was like one of the most awkward dates I've seen.
The
redhead. How when Chris opens the door, why does he say all these awkward stuff? Like, all right, we're just over here. We're just right over here. Okay, the car's just outside. Like, you could tell, I think he was not into it from the moment he opened the door. And so he was making really uncomfortable small talk about, like, where the car was parked on the street.
I think he was trying to be funny. It's like, we're going to stay to the right. The car's right over here.
Yeah, walking right here.
But it sounded like a TSA agent. I'm going to be very professional using the back of my hand. I'm going to come around your back. The back of my hand, I'm touching you on the small of your back. Now we're going to be walking forward. Forward, this way.
At least he was honest. He said in the write-up, it was short and straight up. He was like, she's a nice girl, but I didn't feel any connection, and there won't be another date. Boom.
She loved him.
She did. She wanted. And she's like, I'm an artist, and like most of my family, maybe 3/4 of us are artists. And it was delightful. What a great time it is.
She took an AP class.
What a great time it is. Woo, it's so good.
No, I hate
it. We encourage you all to watch and dislike the videos on YouTube.
You want a better date-ish movie? The Phone Call. The 1977 production of The Phone Call was released onto YouTube this week.
That stars Marty McFly's brother.
Thank you, the Ensign Magazine Facebook page, for letting me know that The Phone Calls.
You might have to explain The Phone Call to people, Al.
That was an entertaining part of my youth. So The Phone Call is just a BYU video from back in the day when BYU did interesting videos. And it's about this nerdy kid who's trying to get some confidence so he can ask a girl out. And he's sure that she's not going to love him. And drama ensues, excitement, adventure at every turn, with great quotable quotes. I mean, there's some good lines, good dialogue in there.
And if I'm not mistaken, there's a great element. Yeah, there's a great element of a classic mom and pop diner place.
Yeah, there's a good moral.
It's basically an iceberg, just right there.
But that one too. The drive-in that he works at.
That's what I'm saying.
Learning to make milkshakes and sell hot dogs.
It's very Utah. Oh, it's delightful. The Phone Call is pretty dang entertaining. I encourage everyone.
Yeah,
it's
a great little flick. Well, and I remember because it was like that was our activity of choice when we were in mutual and had to do something with the girls. And so they'd always like throw us in a room and be like, what should we do for an hour?
And you thought of watching The Phone Call rather than, I don't know, having 7 minutes in heaven or anything like that.
Yeah, you know, my single nature is now explained as I look
back. Is it?
Back
or maybe Southern
classes.
California youth are just like amoral.
Are you?
Maybe you're just a better person.
I'm from Missouri.
I know. By the way,
would have farmed if they'd let us. Let's go raise pigs. Come on, Becky.
Yes. So for films, I finally saw The Dark Knight at 11 p.m. at the Smithsonian on Thursday. It was delightful.
IMAX.
Yeah, I was holding out for the IMAX, and so we finally went there. A show that late, but it's great. It's so I wanted to see it on real IMAX, not these kind of faux IMAXs that pop up nowadays. It was worth it. It was great.
Faux IMAX?
It was delightful. I'm just happy I saw it, because now I never have to see it again.
Well, what did you think of it?
Al, we had a heated disagreement about this.
Right. Go on.
I felt that it was good, not great, probably the weakest of the Christopher Nolan trilogy.
I thought it was great. I thought it was phenomenal.
It had a
film.
Lot of problems. Actually, bear in mind right now, if you haven't seen it yet, there might wind up being some plot spoilers right now, because I'm not going to censor myself. So tune out for the next minute or two.
Jeffrey.
Just in case. It's been out for almost 2 weeks. If you haven't seen it at this point, you've got a problem. It's only on repeat viewers, right? You know, by now, so who cares? I just felt like
Jeffrey.
It was very... Every movie has plot holes, but I felt like it was really full of plot holes. Like, really, really full of plot holes.
Okay, well, I disagree. I feel like it summed it up well, and it ended it well.
Let me
poke. Here's an
example.
It was a trilogy that needed to be ended, and how else would you have had it end, Jeff?
I'm not worried about the end. I'm talking
Give
about the movie overall.
Give me an alternative way. What should they have
let's,
done?
Let's,
oh, wise
let's
wizard.
Back up a bit. Bane goes to the New York the Stock Exchange and raises hell. Let's think about this.
He goes to the Occupy Wall Street movement?
He goes in there and does a bunch of trades to like ruin stuff. First
you,
of all, by
get
law,
feeling,
wouldn't
did
they
you
just
get that
be,
feeling as well? It was kind of a slap to the Occupy
well,
Wall Street.
I think there was a little bit of that, but I don't think it was that bad.
I enjoyed it.
But
especially their Court of Common Consent.
But let's think about this, people. He does all these like illegal trades to ruin the stock market in a full room What, by stock market rules, wouldn't they just nullify everything that just happened? Yes. And then how did he get the dirt bike to come riding out of the stock exchange? Were the dirt bikes just hiding in a closet somewhere? And then the chase starts clearly in the middle of the day, and all of a sudden in the next frame when Batman is chasing after him and trying to get the little tablet, it's like 10 p.m. Did I miss it when 6 hours went by while they were just roaming up and down the streets of Manhattan?
And Jeff, it was clearly December when the sun goes down at 4 o'clock.
And while we are at it, I could have done without so much overt Manhattan footage, you know? I feel like it took me out of Gotham. The other movies would show a skyline. They filmed a lot in Chicago, but they would never show famous landmarks. They wouldn't show the Hancock Tower, the Willis.
What famous landmark did you see?
You see it all over. You see all of the skyline of Manhattan. You see the Empire State Building. You can see Chrysler Building. You see the construction of the Freedom Tower. You see the whole stupid island. And while everyone knows Gotham is sort of a stand-in for New York, the point is it's supposed to be its own city. And so I felt more like I was watching a movie in New York as opposed to the mythical world of Gotham, which was created in the first two films, even in a realist sense. That was weak. I don't understand the whole ejection seat or the autopilot thing. That doesn't make any sense. If there was a nuclear...
How do you not understand the ejection seat? He puts it on autopilot, then what does he do? Ejects.
Because if he puts it up, there was one bat, and if he let the freaking thing get nuked, how could right after that they show Morgan Freeman looking at...
How do you know there was one bat?
Well, then, if that was the
case...
There
was a prototype that they developed on, and then the actual live-scale ready-to-rock one.
If there was a live-scale ready-to-rock one, wouldn't that be the one he would have taken?
The prototyping one was one that they had, like, Git commits going into, and Bruce Wayne, his last commit was 6 months ago when he fixed the autopilot.
Also, if he was going to fly with a nuclear bomb and save everyone, he would have to be flying something like 700 miles an hour to get it far enough away in the time that was allotted to get it a safe distance away from the city. So really, most of the shoreline of Gotham, quote-unquote, and New Jersey should have all been incinerated, let alone the nuclear fallout issues that are associated with this. The list goes on here, buddy. I'm sorry.
I will fight you.
John Blake, I don't understand what he's supposed to do. Just hang out in the Batcave afterwards without the resources of the now defunct Wayne Enterprises. He can't really go up in Wayne Manor because there's a bunch of vagrant kids running around there now. So what? How is this supposed to happen? What is going on?
Are you for real right now?
I'm so for real. There are many things that are confusing in that film. Also, no Joker. All prisoners get released and there's no mention of the Joker. Not even a mention of the Joker.
I sat down. Well, it's 8 years. Assuming.
And why was it
the Joker
8 years?
And the Joker got his leg.
Also, no one notices that, Bruce Wayne and Batman both happen to die at the exact same time and neither of their bodies are recovered. And no one raises any eyebrows. Also,
why would they? Two people die all the time.
Also, how does John Blake know? No one can figure out who Batman is based on him walking around. But John Blake,
let's think about this. They were in the middle of a riot. Of course, there's going to be people dying. Bruce Wayne could die.
He could.
And then Batman dies.
And of course, in the beginning, or near the beginning, the Joseph Gordon-Levitt guy just goes to Bruce Wayne's house and he's like, "What's up? I know you're Batman because of like the look on your face." Do you know how many other people have seen the look on his face and nobody's figured it out? But John Blake, the genius of the world, he clearly has it all figured out.
He was in 500 Days of Summer. He gets it.
He doesn't get it. He chases after Zooey Deschanel like an idiot for so long. He doesn't get it until the end.
Jeff, that's what real life is.
It is what real life is, but he doesn't get it.
Okay. We have to move on. I cannot.
I think I want to spend the entire show talking about problems with The Dark Knight Rises. I don't even care about Mormon news. I am passionate, and I've been arguing with me and two of my roommates went and saw it. I was kind of like, eh, and the other one was kind of, and one of them really liked it, and so we've been kind of skulking around, arguing with each other.
Let's talk about this, my impression of it, here's what I did. I went and sat down, and I was entertained for 2.5 hours, and I got up and said, "That was a very entertaining movie, thank you," and I walked out. That was it. Hey, guess what? Oh, I'm not an idiot. I'm not a nerd. I'm not a goofith.
Was it even entertaining, though? I was bored for large stretches of it, honestly.
You were bored in that movie?
There were many parts that were just kind of boring.
That was like one of the greatest battle scenes when all the cops
No, it was
in.
Awful. That was the worst idea ever. For one, how did the cops not even have facial hair? I mean, they've been buried in the metro, in the subway for like 5 months, and they're not all
Jeff,
scraggly
didn't
and gross.
Did you see they were dropping supplies, notes, and shaving equipment?
Is that part of it? They all dropped them all a nice supply of schick to make sure that everything would be okay?
No, they were sponsored by Gillette.
that. And then when they come out, why would all of you make a company front as if it's like the Revolutionary War and then run at the guys with guns, whereas no one's really shooting guns? Instead of, I don't know, take side streets, run in other buildings and get air cover. You know, things that you would normally do in a realistic battle if you were actually going to try and, you know, take people down. Instead, you make a nice thin line on one street and run straight at the guys who are pointing automatics at you. That makes a lot of sense to me.
All right.
We can move on.
We cannot have this discussion.
It's over. I'm done with it. I'm done with you. Okay, I'm not really.
Oh, jeez. should
we do some Mormon news maybe for like, you know, 10 or 15 minutes at least, right? Yeah. Should we do that?
Well, once a week, whether we need it or not. Time for Mormon news.
Hey, yeah, all right. Hey, so Marriott, anti-gay, according to Al.
Yeah, let me explain. There's a little article in here. In where is it? In the Business Insider. It talks about... about Bill Marriott also dislikes gay marriage, but people aren't freaking out at his hotel chain. They just talk about the differences of course you've heard about this snafu with Chick-fil-A, where the owner came out. You know, he didn't come out. He actually came out against gay marriage. Chick-fil-A has donated to the tune of $2 million to like the traditional marriage stuff. And he said, like, he made just kind of some outspoken comments about, I guess, homosexuals, and talked about how our nation is at risk because of them, et cetera, right? And so people have kind of given Chick-fil-A some backlash. Not me. I had 2 breakfast burritos there this morning. I get the sausage, and they have that great jalapeno salsa. Very nice. But they've had a downturn because they, like, traditionally, everybody loves them. They are, like, beloved amongst beloved in the fast food world because they're great and it's good service and good food and yada yada yada. Well, so this has kind of irked some people and started an anti Chick-fil-A movement of sorts. I don't think it's going to last. I think they'll be fine. Just stick it out. But still, you know, some drama. Well, so Bill Marriott actually, you know, he also shares the kind of anti-gay views, so to speak, but the reason why people aren't stressing about it is because he's very particular in saying, here's how I feel as a person. You know, my company does not have a stance. We love you no matter how you are or what you're doing. Like, if you know, like, they don't distinguish, they're not going to donate any money anywhere, they're not going to come out with any outspoken statements. And he himself is much more, you know, when he wants to speak about his faith, he's complimentary of the things his faith has given him rather than the things that his faith has made him not like, which I think is kind of a page that we could all take for our books of, you know, like, I think we do more good in referencing the good that comes out of our faith rather than what our faith makes us against. I mean, for better or worse, there's a time and a place for everything, right? There's time to make a stand and stuff, but at the same time, you know, be mindful of others' feelings, all that kind of stuff. I think old Billy Boy Marriott and his porn addiction that he's so famous for keeping in the hotels.
What? Bill Marriott has no porn addiction. On the record, Al's statements are his own. They don't represent anybody but himself.
No, that's not true. I heard it in the Business Insider.
No, you're thinking of a couple of years ago when Marriott decided to stop doing pornography rentals from their hotel rooms because they just said they just didn't make money off it anymore.
That's not true. That never happened.
That did happen. Where have you been?
No, they make money on that.
No, they said they don't because now with people having the internet, they just do it that way. So they don't make the money from, you know, flopping onto your TV and finding the adults only channel and shelling out $12 to watch whatever. Yeah, they said they were getting rid of it because it wasn't as cost effective anymore. They didn't. Their margins were weak.
Really? I forget.
This happened.
Anywho.
I don't mind.
Well,
I don't mind.
What do you think about the old Chick-fil-A drama?
What do I think? Well, I firmly believe, obviously, you know, private institutions can do whatever the heck they want.
Yeah, there's no law against it.
There's law against it. They're free to do.
That's what's stupid about it is, like, the cities that are, the mayors that are coming out and saying, we're going to try and block Chick-fil-A from coming in because it has an opinion.
Yeah, which is silly I think that's stupid. Yeah. I agree with you in that sense. Chick-fil-A can have an opinion all they want. I mean, you might not agree with it, but they can have one. Because as far as I know, unless it starts coming out that Chick-fil-A is actually on the human resources side, like denying employment to people based on sexual preference or race or anything like that, or treating people differently or denying service to someone of that because of things like that, that's a different issue. But what the company does privately with its own funds is its own business, you know? And so I do understand a little bit more of the complaint where there's one thing if a company, even if a company has an official stance but doesn't do anything with it, or in like the case of Marriott, where just like the head of the company has a personal view but doesn't like push it, you know, as through as company policy. I do understand because Chick-fil-A has donated to political causes, so I understand it's a little bit more justly so, I think, that they become kind of a target because it's not like they are just sort of passively supporting traditional marriage. I mean, they are out using their know-how to actively campaign for it. And so that makes them, it makes it a little bit different, but I still don't think they're not, but they're not a lawmaking institution, you know, so.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my feeling on it. So good for Marriott. Good for all of them.
Good for everyone.
So the Sunstone Symposium was this past week in Salt Lake City, which is all, you know, a gathering basically of Mormon intellectuals. They have a lot of stuff that goes on. And I thought there was an interesting thing that popped up here where a guy named Randall Smith gave a presentation of the symposium all about how he was hired by the church back in the 70s to sort of create, as they described it, a welcome sign to be in front of Mormon chapels, as they did in front of, you know, at the time, many Protestant Catholic churches. The church was sort of looking for, at that time in the 70s, sort of a uniformity in branding and message. And this is kind of an interesting read just to learn the history of how this guy worked to create the font that the church uses, you know, which most of you all know this day, you know, this day and age, and how he was also tapped in later on in the 90s when we changed, you know, how the original plaque was where the entire name of the church except for the prepositions was, you know, one size,
right?
But and now, you know, the newer one, of course, that has Jesus Christ more prominently in the center, and church and Latter-day Saints are, you know, in smaller type on the top and bottom. And he was tapped for that. Really cool read, just to kind of learn the history of that, what the church was looking for. And you really see during this time period kind of the beginning of the church finding ways to market its brand, so to speak, in more effective ways. And we even see it now, not with just this. Angel Moroni obviously has become very synonymous with the church. And that's why we've even gone back on temples that weren't built with a Moroni and like tacked one on, Provo Temple being a pretty recent example of that. And we see things like this. So it's just a good read, I think.
I heard the people that came up with the new formatting for the churches, you know, with the Jesus Christ being very prominent, was a Jewish ad firm or something really? Like that. Do you know anything about that?
I don't know if I know anything about being a Jewish ad firm. It was in the 90s when we were feeling a lot more heat because of, you know, Protestants were arguing that we were not Christian enough, so to speak. And there was push, it says in the article, that the current logo was, they wanted it to be less corporate looking, a little bit warmer. And that's also why we have the logo that we have today. And of course, the church is very big on serifed fonts now because they feel like that makes it more welcoming and kind of, you know, kind of classy, graceful in a sense.
It does. It's true.
So it's kind of a fun little read, folks. I just, you know, just read it. It's only about a page and a half. And of course, Peggy Fletcher Stack wrote it. So, you know, it's good.
Peggy Fletcher Stack. So, that woman is everywhere.
I know, really.
Our name should become synonymous with PFS. That's Peggy Fletcher Stack. Let's see. There's one here. I don't even want to mention this one almost. This lady, this crook, Eliza Wood. Not Elijah Wood. Eliza Wood, don't tell me she's not trying to ride that train.
Well, especially with the Hobbit movies being split into three instead of two. Yeah. She wants that publicity.
Are Mormons closer to Muslims or Christians? Where she just gives like just a bunch of stupidness. Like she does not do any of her research. Just essentially, she claims that Mormons believe that Jesus was just a good prophet.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike Christians who believe, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, we just feel like he was a good guy. Just a good guy. Very similar to the Islam belief. No, lady. So anyway, really bad article. Bad enough that it merited a couple of rebuttals. I mean, nothing really of note that you all are going to find like new or interesting. Just more trash that people wrote and then people that said that's trash. sort of what we do very often.
Yeah. You mean on this show or in general?
In general.
Yeah, that's true.
And on the show, I guess.
So, if we, you know, if we kept track about how Elder Stephen E. Snow has been appointed. He's the historian of the church. You know, he took over from Marlon K. Jensen recently. But he's been appointed to President Obama's council, the President's Advisory Council on Faith-Based and Neighborhood Partnerships.
Did you just say on Faith-Based?
Faith-Based. I don't know what I said. Let's just know that I meant faith-based. kind of cool, though. I guess we're not, you know, that's some big impact here. It's a council. There's 25 members. But it's great because we actually have a member, a standing member of the 70s serving on this council in the Obama administration.
Is the hidden impact?
That it's good for us. I don't think we've always had a Mormon on the council. And so now we do. President Obama, it's funny because I just had a roommate telling me, you know, why doesn't Obama employ more Mormons? And yet, on a very prominent council about these issues, Mormons have been around there before, but we've got a very prominent leader in the church to help not just promote faith, but to promote greater understanding of the church's stance on a lot of things.
What a nice man.
I feel like
Do you know anything about old boy Snow?
He was in my ward a couple of months ago. Well, I wonder if he was here for that or if it was. I think it must have been for that because we didn't have a stake conference, but we had a stake meeting where. So all of us still met and there were satellite feeds and whatever else. And he spoke to the whole stake on closed circuit and from the meeting houses about, you know, just whatever. So it was like a stake conference, but it wasn't. He made a point to say, this isn't stake conference. We're not here for any official business. We're not like splitting the stake. We're not building a new temple. We're not doing anything. It's like, but, you know, we're in town and the brethren. Wanted us to have a chance to say hello. I really wonder if that's what he was up to when he was here because of that. They just had some meetings with stake presidents and stuff as well. The funny thing is we had that, and then there's been two other members of the 70, of the second quorum of the 70, in just my ward the past couple of weeks. And they weren't there doing anything. They're just at church, hanging out. They're really keeping tabs on us. I don't know if I should be afraid. I've decided I'm guessing this probably isn't true. I'm thinking they might be deciding whether they can organize a single stake in the D.C. region or not. And that's...
You have that many?
There's a good chunk, and that's why it's kind of like right there on the fence. So that's why I wonder if they're investigating that, you know, checking it out.
How fun would that be?
So fun. Oh, my gosh.
That would just be so neat.
Oh, my gosh. It'd be so great.
Okay, so... What? So there's an article in Deseret News called No More Mr. Nice Mormon. They're just taking a little page out of the book. So the Business Week cover caused a little bit of a rebuttal from the church. And typically the church's response is, you know, they believe what they believe, we believe what we believe, and here's what we believe, and the church is true. Well, instead, so the rebuttal on the Business Week cover and article, which we spoke about 2 weeks ago, Jeff?
Yeah.
Or last week?
Maybe
2 weeks ago. They say the Business Week cover...
Oh, that was at least 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago.
...in such poor taste, it is difficult to even find words to comment on it. This is Michael Purdy talking. Sadly, the cover is a reflection of the bias and speculative nature of the article itself. It is narrow and incomplete, omitting, for instance, a good deal of information given on how church resources are used. The article misses the mark, and the cover is obviously meant to be offensive to many, including millions of Latter-day Saints. Which is kind of they got a little bit of teeth in them, these guys. The church PR,
this
which
is
very,
happening.
Very unexpected, I think. And, you know, as Romney continues to, like, Romney finally is standing up for against some of the attacks on his faith, I feel like they're starting to be a little bit more bold, maybe. The church PR machine is being a little bit more bold in saying, no, we're not just going to lay here and let you beat us around. Like, here's what's right, here's what's wrong.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Well,
it could be something nice.
It is good. The one thing I wonder, I believe that article does mention that when like the Book of Mormon musical came out last year, the church, they draw the contrast between, you know, how kind of, like, pleasant that release was, just like, hey, this is the thing that's designed to entertain and whatever. The real point is that for people to really draw closer to Christ, they should read the Book of Mormon and pray about it. And it was, and even the creators on that side said, like we appreciate the church being kind of, like, cool with this, and they're not saying that they love it or anything, but they're saying that you know, people want to do this and be entertained, that's fine, but remember that we have a real message out there. And you do contrast that with us being a little bit more oppositional. I don't know what's actually going to be better in the end. I've kind of been more on the bandwagon of I like to defend our faith and not kind of put up with people giving us crap. But
yeah.
So it will be interesting to see what happens with that in the end. I just hope they don't flip out like Romney's PR people did in Poland over the weekend. That'd be good.
What happened in Poland?
They snapped when one of his press guy told the reporters to kiss his A.
Who snapped?
Romney's press secretary.
Oh, and told
reporters were asking him questions, and he just said, "This is sacred ground." He just said, "Kiss my A. This is sacred ground to Jewish people, or to Polish people." And there was another and he also yelled at them for something else. He had to retract and send them all apology things, but he like totally snapped on all the reporters.
Well, good for him.
Yeah, sure. If that's what we, want to be into, you know, yelling at people. Oh yeah, he told reporters to shove it. That's the measured response we're looking for. Hey, shove it. I want Romney to say that in an obate. To Obama in a debate. If he asks him a question he doesn't like, just say, you know what, Barack, shove it.
I'm fed up with you.
And speaking of Mitt Romney, a book that's called Romney's Gay America is topping the Amazon sales list. Romney's Gay American, Mormon Leaders, Same-Sex Rights, Bridging the Gap. So it's not saying, it's not like a slam piece. It's merely discussing about, you know, what the ramifications would be of an active Mormon president, the church's stance, what's going on with gay rights, and how that all comes together and what that could mean for all of this. It offers solutions, Al.
Oh, I was wondering. I was hoping you were going to finish that thought.
I feel like...
Solutions.
I feel like we're... It's synergy, actually. Synergy.
Solutions.
Lots of synergy.
So, been watching the Olympics. I've been having... Man, I had the worst time getting any of the Olympics because I don't have a cable TV subscription. It's been horrendous. NBC, shame on you. I think you're terrible people. But I did finally get on. And thank you, the Undernet, for guiding me.
The Undernet.
So I'm watching the Olympics now, but there's some Mormons in there.
There are a handful. Yeah. This is true.
We got a shot putter. It looks like a mean, mean woman. But we love her. And she's married, so you can be as mean looking as you want. We got a pole vaulter. From our Oregon student. Is she single? I wonder. A water polo goalie, who also this week had an interview on NPR.
When they ask her hard-hitting questions like, how do you win?
No, they ask her like, what's a day like for you? And she says, well, practice, practice, practice. And they said, all day, every day? And she said, yes. And they said, wow. We got two volleyball, men's volleyball guys indoor, and then a one beach volleyball. Jake Gibb, a U of U fella. Good on you, buddy. Way to go. Sarah Robles.
Sure, I'm just...
And weightlifting.
Just keep it going.
And then my favorite, John Nunn, race walking.
That's a sport?
That is the 50-kilometer race walk.
Does that just involve... Is that like power walking, basically? Like lightweight?
Yeah, and it's speed walking.
It's speed walking.
Exactly.
Speed walking is an Olympic event. They got rid of baseball this year, but speed walking gets to be an event.
Which I actually have a very good friend who speed walked in college in Maine. Apparently it's a New England thing.
Yeah, I think just because somebody did it in Maine, it's a New England thing.
Guess where Maine is?
Is that New England?
And no other school in the country has speed walking as a sport.
Well, that's why they always win. They don't have any competition. This is silly.
So
common sense.
Also,
dictates.
We have a swimmer, Bria Larson, and then a few from out of country. New Zealand has a couple. And Venezuela, Bolivia, the Cook Islands all have Mormon Olympian representatives.
Good for us. Good for us. We do need to follow updates, because you can find in the news even articles that specifically talk about how the Mormons have been faring so far.
Yeah, I don't know. We can update you next
week. Should I make another live table like I did for my tie counter during the Olympics, where we can keep track of what's going on with people.
You should totally do that.
The tie counter was hilarious. I had a great time doing that. I learned so much. It was great.
You really did. The Paisleys, not as well represented.
All right, President Monson's turning 85, everybody. He's going to have a party. Does this happen every year, this party, or is this just because he's 85? I feel like there are always parties.
I'm pretty sure he has a lot of parties.
I don't know how I feel about these parties.
Why not?
I don't know. I love the prophet. I just feel like 85 is an okay year to celebrate. I just don't feel like...
He likes a big hoo-ha.
I just don't feel like we need to like use resources on throwing a big bonanza every single year.
Use resources? Jeff, somebody is going to say, let's throw the man a party. And
yeah, you and you know what they do? They get one of those steak centers, close family and friends and associates, and everyone comes and hangs out and has Jell-O shots. It's great.
It's a time for celebration, and no Mormon is doing Jell-O shots. You buffoon.
I was waiting for you to pick up on that one. All I know is Steve Young is going to be there.
Like, why not celebrate?
I'm not saying celebration.
We should celebrate
in and of itself, but let's think about how much money is involved in having a thing at the conference center that's broadcast, that has hundreds of people working. Why can't we just make funeral potatoes and just sit around and talk?
Hundreds of people working. You want to put people out of jobs, Jeff. You're just like that. Hi. That president.
I'm like Mitt Romney.
Right.
I believe in austerity.
Okay, so...
But he's going to be there. Steve Young will be there. Jane Clayson, their standby. Some singers and, like, some people.
A bunch of people we don't know,
and everyone's going to...
I expected more famous people.
Yeah, why couldn't they get, like, Bow Wow?
Tora Bright.
Tora Bright. Yes. Also, building on this, friends, some quick temple news coming from me here.
Boise.
Yeah, go for it.
I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
Anyway, the Boise Temple's been under an extensive renovation for a while. They just announced the rededication dates, and that'll be on Saturday, the 17th of November of this year. So enjoy that, no, Boise people.
It'll be rededicated on Sunday, the 18th.
Sorry, thank you. Are they going to have a brief open
house? There's a cultural celebration on the 17th.
They find any excuse to do these cultural celebrations now, and even for temples that are already standing. Because, you know, they didn't do them in the 80s when they built the Boise Temple, so... I guess they're like, guys, let's celebrate Western Idaho. Let's celebrate all that it stands for.
Yeah, it's pretty much like the Iowa State Fair. So you'll get some tiger ears and have an Indian relay race.
But there will be more fun. Basques present. So that's a good thing.
Neat.
Boises. Also, the Tijuana Temple groundbreaking will be
Tijuana.
It will be on August 18th at 9 a.m. where the temple is in Tijuana.
Weren't you saying this was kind of a funky-looking temple?
Sort of. I wonder if it leaked, because I can't find the image anywhere else at this point. And oftentimes, nowadays, they don't unveil the designs until the groundbreaking. But I saw a thing that showed it, and the style of it was clearly in that same, just that same way that we do concept art for all of our temples. So I'm assuming it's legit, but I can't confirm that. The church has been pushing to make newer temples... a little bit, to make them fit in a little bit more with the history or the culture of an area. You can see this last year with the way the Philadelphia Temple was designed. And also...
Yeah, it looks like almost cathedral-esque.
Does LDS church temples have the picture finally? Yeah, they do. Good, they put it up. Yeah, this is the picture I found. So it's a temple, and it almost looks like a classic Spanish Baroque Catholic church.
That is awesome, man, with the four columns in the front.
Yeah, I mean, it really follows, and I'm okay with, yeah, I'm actually okay with that. You know, we've gotten on before about how all the temples are following this sort of bland and soulless modern aesthetic, and I'm sure...
Bland and soulless Mormon temple.
But I am sure the floor plan will be similar, but I can dig this. I'm glad, thanks for finding this, Al. I wasn't sure if they'd put it up anywhere yet. So there it is. Yeah, it's crazy. I've never seen them go that, like, all out to blend in with a country or a culture.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet.
Closest I've seen, honestly, this isn't because I'm from there, but the way the Newport Beach Temple turned out, more in like California mission style, is one of the at least closer versions I've seen. So good for Tijuana. It's kind of cool. Good for the church.
Good for Tijuana.
Good Tijuana. Hola, híjole.
Yeah. Jeff, tell us about Matt Christensen.
Just real quickly, I want to finish up here. Matt Christensen, he's been the president of the Tabernacle Choir for a long time. We announced a little while ago...
He's dying.
He was stepping down from his post as choir president.
Stepping down.
He's been there since 2000. And so anyways, this past Sunday was he's stepping down effective on August 1st, but this past Sunday was his last music and the spoken word with the choir. So he basically, they did the show, then the choir sang God Be With You Until We Meet Again to him. And that's it. It's over. But the choir's seen a huge surge under his leadership. So that's kind of the big thing. I mean, you've seen... Motab creating its own label. You know, all those recordings that started, especially with Consider the Lilies. that's all. A lot of that comes as his sort of brainchild. So he will be missed. He's done very good things for the Tabernacle Choir.
Mm-hmm.
He's improved their visibility quite a bit.
Well, everybody.
Oh, last but not least, there's a new video of the most interesting Mormon in the world.
Oh yeah.
They put,
it wasn't as good, no. But it was a nice reminder.
Yeah, the carried the extra mile thing was kind of weak at the end, but I liked some of the other parts of it. Missionary stuff. It's still funny. So we'll put that over on our webpage. You can check it out. You might remember we had them on the show last September or so. Aaron Johnson and some other folks. It was Adam Johnson, sorry, and it was a fun time.
And we love them. I'd like to have them back, actually.
We should have them back. We haven't had guests for a while. By the way, Jenna Kim Jones got married over the weekend. Our love to Jenna.
Good for you, JKJ. Really nice.
Congrats.
Really nice to see you doing those things you do.
Breaking my heart into a million pieces.
Breaking my heart into...
Like you always do.
A million pieces. Yeah, those things.
It hurts me so just to see you go.
With someone new. And if I know you,
you're doing that thing that thing. You do.
All right, everybody. I hope you have a great week. You can find us at thisweekinmormons.com. We've been having some good comment dialogue going on. So come argue with us. We like it. Tweet at us at TheRealTwim or catch us on Facebook. Facebook.com/thisweekinmormons. We share all kinds of neat things. And Jeff asks probing questions like tithed on the net or the gross.
Isn't that a fair... It's a fair discussion to have. I'm still curious about that. I've always felt that it's gross, but some people feel that it should be net. There are good arguments all around.
I don't mind tithing on the net as long as you also pay tithing on your...
Tax return. Which I also think is fair. I just feel like we shouldn't get into a huge discussion about this. But simply put, I feel like if I were contracting and not having my tithing withheld from my employer, I would obviously pay on the full amount and then pay my taxes after the fact. And so by that logic, why would I pay less tithing just because my employer happens to take the money out first?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a personal thing. I pay on my gross. I like it. And it works for me, but it's not everyone.
Not everyone. Al, I hope that you have a marvelous week.
Jeff, I will. See you, buddy.
Thanks, dude. Everyone, thanks so much for listening to This Week in Mormons, and we do love hearing from you, so we encourage that. And also, keep a lookout for Sunday School Bonanza, your terrific Sunday School preparatory podcast. Make you a better person. That's going to do it for us.
All right.
Everyone, have a great week. This has been This Week in Mormons, 130th episode, as of now untitled, but I'm guessing it'll be called something like Romney's Gay America. I don't know. All right.
We'll
bye, everybody.
See you, man.